Welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, where you'll get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside the legal nurse consulting business. They'll share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with over 30 years' experience. So join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's your host, Pat Iyer.
Welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast. This is Pat Iyer, and we're going to be talking today about some presentation skills with Carol Little. Carol and I met at a conference for nurse entrepreneurs, and I was struck by her area of expertise, which includes being a trainer, a facilitator, a speaker, and a coach. She has 15 plus years of experience training leaders in diverse industries, including the computer industry, finance, corporate real estate, automotive, electronics, healthcare industries, and the funeral industry. Her coaching clients include top-level executives, industry leaders, and successful entrepreneurs. She excels at helping her clients to move forward beyond the roadblocks that prevent them from achieving their full potential. Carol is dedicated and hardworking and committed to helping her clients achieve success. She has a slogan called Information That Leads to Transformation. It's not just a slogan, it's her mission, her passion, and her promise. Carol, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to talk with me today.
Well, I'm so happy to be with you today, Pat. Thank you so much for having me.
I would like to start by having you understand that our legal nurse consultant audience, who are healthcare workers, are probably among the people that you've been involved in terms of training. So tell us about your training experience when you talked about being involved in training healthcare leaders or professionals.
So the experience that I've had has been mostly with people in the wellness professions, chiropractors, naturopaths, holistic practitioners, and I also did a lot of work and training for a vitamin company. Mm-hmm. So mostly in training. And so that's been my experience mostly with the healthcare profession.
Okay. And certainly that's a growing area of healthcare as people pay more attention to some of those alternative therapies, the focus on eating well, making sure that you're nutritionally sound. We know as legal nurse consultants how being off kilter in those areas can lead to illness, which then brings them into the healthcare system.
Well, a number of the clients, the people I know personally, are registered nurses, and they've expanded into a more holistic approach to health, wellness, as opposed to just a pharmaceutical approach.
I know that you talk about addressing the inner conversations that fuel your outer conversations. Tell us, what does that mean?
So what I often see when I'm working with people in the area of public speaking is they'll have a speech prepared, and I'll speak with them prior to going up to do the presentation, and they're warm and engaging and expressive and just really wonderful to communicate with. And then they walk up to the podium and there's this stiff, boring person who delivers the speech. And I always find myself saying, where is that person that I was just talking to in the chair? So what I have come to understand is that people often feel that who they are isn't good enough. So they send a representative to the podium to do the job, and they project who they think they should be. And a big part of what fuels that is the inner conversation that they're having with themselves. So obviously, most people are nervous, and what they're saying to themselves are things like, oh no, I'm so nervous, I'm so afraid I'm going to forget what I have to say, oh, my mouth is dry, oh, I'm going to stumble. And there's all this negativity that's going on in their head. And that negativity, that what I call that inner conversation, is fueling that outer conversation. Because rather than being focused on the audience, on the people that you're talking to and that you want and need to connect with, the focus is all inward. And so those inner conversations often go back much further than just the presentation that they're about to give. You know, anyone who has little kids or knows little kids know that we often put those little stickers on their paper that say, readers are leaders, and, you know, I'm a leader, and I'm smart. And we do that because we want to give them that positive reinforcement. We want them to go out into the world thinking that they can. But for ourselves, we have a tendency to sticker ourselves with a lot of negative connotations, a lot of negative conversation. So if someone has ever said anything bad about us, oh, you're too fat, oh, you're too short, oh, you're not smart, whatever it might be, we take those things in internally and we continually repeat those things to ourselves. And so we just sort of have this negative tape that's running nonstop. And we bring it with us to the podium, and it informs how we then deliver whatever it is that we have to say. So that's what I call the inner conversation and how it affects the outer conversation, which is what you're actually saying to the people or person in front of you.
In your experience, is it true that the expression that the number one fear of people is public speaking, even above the fear of death?
I used to think that, but I have worked with hundreds of people now, and I no longer believe that that's true. People's number one fear is not public speaking, it's public being. And by that I mean people are terrified to just stand in front of a room full of people and allow themselves to be seen. So they do what I call hide in plain sight. So we do all these things to prevent people from seeing who we really are. There's often nervous tics and vocal things that people do, or they don't want to make eye contact, or they don't smile. And they do all these things so that you can't really see them. So a big part of my job is clearing away all of those things that people do to hide so they can be seen. So I let them know, I give them permission and the encouragement to bring themselves to the stage, whatever that stage might be. They might be sitting across from one person at a table. They might be in a room full of people. They might be on a webcam. It doesn't matter. But the real magic is in that individual person. Nobody else can do what you do. No one else can bring what you bring to whatever the message is that you're delivering. And that's what I want to get at.
What you're saying makes me think of advice that I have given to legal nurse consultants who are becoming expert witnesses and testifying, that those types of nervous tics and distracting habits can interfere with delivering their message if they're playing with their hair. Or I had a secretary once who clicked a ballpoint pen off and on and off and on. I took it literally out of her hands. I remember, even though I was a very experienced expert witness testifying at a deposition and had been deposed, I've been deposed probably 400 or 500 times, there was a case that I was really uncomfortable with, and an attorney who was questioning me, who I was uncomfortable with, and I laced my fingers together and put them in front of my mouth, and I didn't realize what I was doing until he told me, I'm having trouble understanding you, please put your hands down. My body, I think, was subconsciously trying to hide from him in plain sight, even though that was not an effective way of communicating.
And that's very common. You know, I videotape the people that I work with, and they're often shocked by the things that they were doing that they had no idea that they were doing. But it's so key to just really be yourself, because that's what the audience connects to. You have to give them something real. And I would take someone who was real and a little bit raw than somebody who was polished and fake any day. And that's where your credibility lies, in your realness. Because people will believe you if you're real, and they can tell when you're not. And that applies whether you're on the stand, on the witness stand, or if you're in front of a room full of people. They need to believe you, they need to trust you, but they can't do that if they can't see you. If you're hidden well away somewhere, they just intuitively, they instinctively know that what they're seeing isn't real. And so they won't believe you, they won't want to work with you, they won't be engaged with you, and sometimes they will just tune out altogether.
Trial attorneys are very good at reading body language, assessing witnesses. It's a big part of what they need to do, because they are focused on credibility, the credibility of the defendant, the credibility of the expert witness. And many of them who are particularly good trial attorneys and thinking on their feet can make snap decisions just based on the factors that you're talking about, the degree of confidence, the eye contact, the way that information is delivered, the pace. All of that goes into establishing credibility. So they can sniff out in a heartbeat somebody who is not authentic or is bluffing and making up information in order to fill a knowledge gap, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're really familiar with body language, it's telling you so much more than what's coming out of your mouth. Not to get too technical, but just to give you a little bit of hard data. There was research done by a gentleman named Albert Mehrabian, and he did a study around communication, verbal communication versus nonverbal communication, and how that relates to things like likability, credibility, trustworthiness, etc. And this, he's a professor at UCLA, and this study was done back in the mid-60s. And at the time, the results were just astonishing. It just wasn't anything that people expected. And my research has shown that the results from the 60s are still holding true today, if not more so. And what the research shows is that 55% of communication has to do, if you simplify it all the way down, with how you look. And when I say how you look, about body language, the way you carry yourself, the way you move through the world. 38% is how you sound. So that relates to that old saying that it's not what you say, it's how you say it. Only 7% of communication is transmitted by what you actually say. Now that seems like really astonishing, especially in your profession and the people that you work with. What they say is incredibly important. But what this data tells us is that if people don't like what you, if they don't like the way you look and how you sound, they don't care mm-hmm. what you have to say. Mm-hmm. And so you absolutely have to be mindful of your body language, because it's saying a lot more than the words that are coming out of your mouth. And when we're nervous, we often do protective behavior. And if you have an attorney who's aware of that, they know that you're feeling scared and that you're protecting yourself, and they'll come in for the kill. So you want to make sure that you're exhibiting confidence. And confidence can be exhibited whether you're feeling it or not. One thing that I've learned is that sometimes the brain follows the body, and sometimes the body follows the brain. And so when you see someone who's confident, if you break it down into its elements, there are some things that people actually do that come across as confident. And so you can do those things. And the great thing is that when you do those things, you actually start to feel more confident.
The old fake it till you make it concept?
I don't, the only reason I don't like that term, I know what you're saying, and I hear you, but I'm all about being real. Mm-hmm. And when you are sitting solidly inside of yourself, then it doesn't matter where you are, it doesn't matter who your audience is, it doesn't matter how intimidating they are. If you are solidly inside of yourself, you're going to do well, and you're going to come across as confident no matter what the situation is, because you are confident in you. And that's what matters, being confident in you. That's what people see. That's what they pick up on. That's what they're drawn to. That's what they believe, and that's what gives you credibility.
I think you're emphasizing something that is really important to be successful in this field, as well as many other fields where you're interacting with people, is your self-talk, your self-esteem, your self-confidence, the messages that you give yourself then translate into how you interact with others. Nurses tend to be, in general, good communicators because we're taught in nursing school how to teach patients, how to communicate with physicians and colleagues. And that gives us a step above people who have a more isolated training or more technical training. I'm thinking of computer information people.
The computer industry.
You know, my older son went to MIT and got his master's there, and he came home from school after the first semester, and he says, Mom, it really is true that there are computer nerds, because the people in my program, for the most part, are computer nerds. They'd rather communicate with their machine than with another person. He is more of a well-rounded, kind of charismatic young man who enjoys talking with people, and he sort of stuck out because he was different than those individuals in his program. So we get involved as legal nurse consultants in doing presentations using our communication skills, either to a room full of attorneys, for example, in a conference room, at a luncheon meeting, or at a attorney conference when that nurse may be one of a group of speakers, or on a panel or presenting information, or teaching and communicating with attorneys one-on-one. Could you give us some tips about the process of planning what you're going to present?
So when you're thinking about what you present, my focus is typically on content delivery. But when it comes to the content itself, I'm more focused on structure. Mm-hmm. And so obviously this doesn't apply to the witness stand where you're going to be asked questions. But if you're preparing your remarks, I'm a big fan of starting strong. It is very difficult to recover from a weak opening. So you want to have a really strong opening line or two that just really grabs your audience's attention. And there's any number of ways that you could do that. Make a startling statement. You could tell a story, you could, you know, recite a quote, something like that, but starting strong. And starting strong for me also means, oftentimes when we have prepared remarks, if they aren't memorized, we're reading them. And it's a bigger challenge to connect with your audience when you're looking down at the page. So part of starting strong is at least knowing your opening line or two so that you can deliver that directly, making eye contact with your audience so that you can make that connection before you have to break it and then go to the page.
I know that every time you lower your eyes, you instantly lose that connection with your audience.
Yes. And there are certain little tips. One, for example, that will keep you from going to the page as often. There are a number of reasons why people don't want to look up, because they're afraid they're going to lose their place. So I teach people to just drop your finger right where you left off, so that when you look, you can take your time and look up and connect with your audience, and when you go back, you know right where you are. That's one. And number two, I work with people on grabbing larger amounts of text at a time. So rather than reading a word at a time, grabbing a phrase at a time. So you can look down, grab that phrase, then look up and deliver the phrase, instead of just up, down, up, down, up, down, one word at a time. So there are some things like that you can do that will help you be able to make more eye contact than you might otherwise.
What other tips do you have for us about delivering presentations?
Speaking for clarity. Now that may sound really obvious, but you know that saying, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. So making sure that you're speaking for clarity. And let me just give you a short demonstration of what I mean. I can say, I never said he robbed the store. I can take that sentence, and depending on where I put the emphasis, I can completely change the meaning. So for example, I never said he robbed the store. 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 Same sentence, same words. The meaning changes completely depending on where you put the emphasis. And I notice that a lot of people, particularly if they're reading from prepared remarks, just read and they aren't thinking at all about emphasis. And so they just come across as words on a page. They sound like someone's reading and not like they're delivering, like they're really talking to you. So it's important to be able to deliver that speech in a way where you sound like you're just talking to them and you're not reading to them, because people will tune out and they get lost. I think of punctuation. No, I think of what I call vocal dynamics or vocal skills, things like projection and inflection, pace, those things being to speech what punctuation is to the written word. So you would never just write a speech and just put word after word down the page with no punctuation. You would have no idea what the intention was or what the meaning was. And it's the same thing when you're delivering a speech. We need to hear that punctuation. So a comma, that's a pause. A period is a little bit longer stop. We need to, you know, a double space between paragraphs, that's a transition. You're going from one topic to another. We need to hear those things in order to be able to really follow and understand what you're saying. Another tip I have, and these are just sort of practical tips. A lot of times when people are nervous, their mouth goes dry. So you really want to hydrate a day or two ahead of time. That seems like a small thing, but when people's mouth goes dry, it affects their ability to speak. They often start smacking, and that can be very distracting, particularly if you're on a microphone. You want to avoid carbonated beverages, dairy. If you're going to deliver a speech, the carbonation will make you bloat, and you'll feel uncomfortable up there, and dairy actually thickens the saliva. Mm-hmm. So you combine that with being nervous and dry mouth, and you can just see how challenging that can be. And the last thing I would say is warm up your voice. There are a lot of muscles involved, and you want to be able to have your voice be loose and flexible, and it really does pay to warm it up. You don't want to crack at an inopportune time, or you want to, it helps you with clarity and being able to form words and be heard, your articulation. So it doesn't seem like it would be a big deal, but it actually can make a big difference in how your presentation comes out.
I've heard professional speakers talk about the risks of damaging your voice if you end up speaking at a very loud level, loud volume, or screaming. Not that you would be screaming in a speech, but if you're speaking very loudly and you're doing that on a routine basis, you may end up damaging your vocal cords.
Sadly, I have personal experience with this. And, you know, when we talk about speaking with volume, the one thing you do not want to do is yell. What you want to do is support your voice using your diaphragm. Your diaphragm is what will allow your voice to carry without yelling. And I found myself in a situation where I was delivering speech to various groups of people. And the event was set up so that it was supposed to have a handful of people at this time, and then 30 minutes later another handful, and so on and so on. And we were supposed to have about, maybe 200 people for the day. We ended up with about 500 people, and over 300 of them showed up in the first couple of hours. And so because it wasn't supposed to be such a large group of people, I wasn't mic'd. Which is fine. I know how to use my diaphragm, and I started off very well. But after a couple of hours, like any muscle, my diaphragm got tired. And once I got tired, I was starting to strain. Mm-hmm. And about 3 hours into the day, I literally said, I'm done. Mm-hmm. And I was hoarse. And what I didn't know until a few days later when I wasn't able to speak at all is that I had actually ruptured a blood vessel in my throat. And I don't know if any of your listeners are familiar with the singer Adele, but there was a period of time where she didn't sing and she couldn't even speak for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And the reason is she had done exactly that. She had ruptured a blood vessel. And I wish I could show you physically, but when you speak, the vocal cords vibrate against each other. And so if you rupture a blood vessel there, the minute you begin to speak, the vibration creates a callus. So the treatment, and your nurses probably know this, so you remove the callus, the node, as they're called, but then you can't speak because the minute you start speaking, you start to create that friction and you create another one. So when your voice is your livelihood, it's incredibly important that you take care of it. And that's why I mentioned warming up, because that really does help prevent a lot of injury. Just like if you go to the gym, you warm up before you do a heavy workout, and it will help you to prevent injury.
Was there anything else that you wanted to cover with us in terms of tips for delivery of presentations?
Again, I think if your audience takes away nothing else, I would say to just be real. That will take them a lot farther than anything else, to just have the courage to be themselves. You know, working, getting some vocal skills or some public speaking training will help you polish up yourself to be the best self that you can be. But to be an effective speaker, You really just have to be you.
And I think today we've talked about various aspects of being you, of being confident, of being aware of your mindset going into a presentation, your self-esteem, your knowledge base, feeling strong in your credibility, preparing your voice, avoiding carbonated beverages, which can make you feel bloated, and God forbid, you should burp into the microphone. That would really be bad. Avoiding milk, not being in a situation where you're going to become hoarse and lose your ability to communicate. All of those are essential tips that you've shared with us today. How can our listeners learn more about you, Carol?
They can find me online at littletrainingcompany.com, or any of your listeners can feel free to reach out to me directly at carol.little@littletrainingcompany.com. And I'd be happy to give any of your listeners a 30-minute session with me if they want to go over something in particular, a particular challenge that they might be having.
Wow.
Well, and you can also find us on Facebook at the Little Training Company on Facebook.
Thank you. That's a really generous offer, Carol, and I appreciate the time that you have spent with us today. This has been Carol Little and Pat Iyer talking with you about presentation tips and skills in your role as a legal nurse consultant, communicating with attorneys, with healthcare providers, with jurors, in many different venues we're involved in giving presentations. Please return to our program next week. We'll have a new interview for you with tips and skills and practical information to help you improve your legal nurse consulting skills and practice. Thanks so much for listening today. Use the code LISTENED to get a 25% discount on this product. You'll put that code LISTENED in the coupon code box during checkout.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on legalnursepodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on legalnursepodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.